Good evening and welcome to Pod 40. No, not the amount of times I've heard Brighton fans say, mind the gap. And no, we're not talking about the 40-point mark that's desired by the bottom three, because none of them have reached it yet. I am joined by Cossy. Scott will be with us shortly. Evening, Coss.
Hello. I hold my hands up. I'm an idiot. I've been made to look absolutely silly after the weekend's football. Norwich is shit. I've always admitted that. However, I've always defended us. I've been made to look even more silly than Brighton fans with Crystal Palace. And yeah, if there was any Brentford fans right now, they would be laughing in my face. I'm actually really glad Cookie's not with us this evening. I hope you get better from COVID, mate. However, I'm really happy you're not joining us, because obviously you would give me absolute stick, which is what I fully deserve. I am fuming. We'll get on to talking about Norwich in the Norwich section. However, believe me, I'm glad that I don't even need... I could have 50 people giving me shit and it still won't be as much shit as I'm going to give myself in this show. So enjoy listening in a bit for me to hold my hands up and say, yes, Ivan Toney is better than Norwich City Football Club.
Have you had a good week, Cossy? Have you had a good week? Well, welcome to the show. I don't really know where to go from there, but anyway.
To be fair, like, if the show was recorded on the usual night, I wouldn't have been able to make it, not because I was in hiding, because I was on a train back from London. However, I am quite disappointed, but also happy at the same time, where I can basically slate the club I support and slate the fans, slate everything about my mood as from Saturday afternoon at 5 o'clock, because yeah, I am fuming. However, I'm happy to be joined by you.
Brilliant. And know, if for those that are wondering, we have not turned into Arsenal Fan TV. We are not a rip-off merchant of that,
and we don't have any impending court cases either.
Boy, that escalated quickly. I mean, that really got out of hand fast.
It jumped up a notch.
It did, didn't it?
Cossy, by the sounds of it, has just had a bit of a frustrating weekend. Anyway, let's probably move on to the colour of his face after the result over the weekend. Claret and blue, we'll start with, scrap at the bottom that you obviously no doubt had your eyes on, with Norwich in mind. Burnley, now they played twice during the week. So they had Leicester and they then played Chelsea. Now, no real surprises on the latter result, but if we quickly come to the first result there, a 2-0 loss to Leicester, and out of form Leicester, it has to be said, that themselves have had their own problems this season. And I've got to say, from a Burnley perspective, you know, they've been fair game for their results this year, but two home games in the space of 4 days there, you'd always fancy them at home, tough place to go. Granted, Chelsea, as I say, the latter maybe wasn't expected, but will they feel a little bit hard done by and disappointed with the performance, Cos?
Yeah, I think Burnley should be disappointed, considering that they're on a bit of a run, that they've been looking good. I think we've all said that we think they're going to get out of relegation now after completely writing them off, because they had, obviously they were rooted at the bottom of the table, but with a few games in hand, and their results recently have shown actually Burnley are going to stay up. However, when they're playing Leicester, they don't really have that much confidence at the minute. That are very, very sort of like, although they're really crap basically recently. And yeah, to be less possession at home, you'd expect that against the Leicester side, the way they shape up. But 9 attempts at goal, 2 shots on goal, 4 shots off goal, 3 block shots. You know, the stats were just Leicester. And if I was their fan base, I'd be a bit pissed off at that game, to be honest, wouldn't you?
No, I mean, it's an interesting one, because come off those results and, you know, they've conceded 6 goals in 2 games. As I say, Chelsea, to a point, you can give them the, you know, kind of wave the white flag on that one. But interestingly, when we're talking about the relegation battle, Newcastle have obviously pulled themselves away from that now. But the one team out of that bottom cluster of 4 or 5 teams that everyone seems surefire that they'll probably get out of it, even after the Leicester result and the respective Chelsea result, is Burnley. And it's an odd feeling, but I still have this England feeling, even though now they've only got what? I mean, they've still got two games on Brentford, one on Leeds. But to me, on paper, they still, despite the two defeats there, seem potentially the most plausible to stay up. Now, you may say a little bit far-fetched, because actually, when you look into the fixtures that they've got coming up, they equally, as do all the teams down there at the moment, as you'd expect, have massive games. And I guess a lot of this will come down to the game against Brentford, your favourite team, on Saturday. So, you know, and then if as we roll into April, they've got City, Man City at home. They've got an away game at Norwich. They've then got West Ham, Wolves and Watford. So, you know, as I say, it's an odd one, because a lot of people are saying, you know, Sean Dyche, Burnley, the signing of Waghorst, you know, gets them out of it. But equally, Brentford will look at that, Norwich even will look at that and think, well, actually, we've equally, and you have on paper at the moment, they've all got the same chances of breaking away. It's just who gets those results.
We've got no chance. We're pathetic. We're embarrassing. We're a shambles of a football club.
We're not in the Norwich segment. Calm yourself down.
To talk about Burnley, they're going to get 3 points at Carrow Road. And mark my words again, I'll be eating my words again. However, they're going to get 3 points on Saturday against Brentford, because Brentford are a shambles as well.
So I think you've answered my question there. So my question to you was going to be, are Burnley staying up?
I still think so, because despite, obviously, again, I hate to talk about Norwich. However, we are relevant right now. Despite Brentford's result at the weekend, I think that was a one-off. I think Burnley will go there and bully them. Obviously, I will talk about the game on Saturday at Carrow Road as to what I saw from Brentford. However, I think Burnley are going to go there this weekend and win. And I'm fully expecting this clip to be on loop in the next episode to make myself look silly after Brentford inevitably beat Burnley 3-0 or 4-0 and Tony gets a hat-trick again. But in all seriousness, I think Burnley will be the team that gets out of it.
So Leeds obviously played Leicester, lost 1-0. Come on to Leicester shortly, but I think they're, you know, they're kind of floating in the middle there. They're not part of this relegation scrap. So we'll come on to Leeds. Obviously, the Messiah has left Elland Road, but they do have a new manager on the touchline. And I don't know about you, I actually think they played right against Leicester and could count themselves a little bit unlucky. Leicester, again, were being very Leicester. But a couple of things that stood out for me with Leeds, which is actually pretty big. So we've spoken a lot about Leeds conceding goals. In the last pod, we spoke a lot about the amount of goals and that it just couldn't continue. And obviously, rightfully so, because if you want to stay up in this league, by God, yes, you can score goals, but you've bloody got to keep them out as well, especially when you're down there. Now, they've got Jesse March in, relative unknown material to most of the world of football. But here's a little stat for you. So he switched them to a back four for a start. I don't know if you noticed that, flat back four. So he went kind of Ralph Raniak and went 4-2-2-2. And interestingly, in that game, they only conceded 7 shots defensively. Now, I don't have the rest of the stats, but when you look at the game against Spurs, where they conceded, 4 or 5, against Liverpool, where they conceded 6. So in those games alone for goals, they conceded 11 goals. But in this game, they only conceded 7 shots and only 1 goal. So,
and not being funny, Leicester are at home. Leicester is obviously boosted by the return of Jamie Vardy. That we might have been saying that he's getting too old, but obviously we'll get on to him. But he made a complete huge difference against Burnley away from home, getting the goal as well. And Leicester are a confidence team. They've just, like I say, they come off the back of a win, so they'll be absolutely buzzing. They're playing a team with a new manager who's been battered like 11 goals in 2 games that they concede, something stupid like that. So you'd have thought Leicester are going to be really up for this. However, with a new manager, as you say, I think Leeds were a bit. They had 19 attempts on goal to Leicester's 7. So yeah. As much as it's easy to obviously being an English football fan and you know hearing an American, obviously it's very easy to take the piss a bit, like Brad Bobley, or is it Brad Bobley?
Bobley?
That's literally, like, honestly, if you go on Soccer AM.
Hi, I'm Brad Bobley.
In case you have any listeners here wondering who on earth he's talking about, now I'm going to have to mind my tongue here because I'll probably slip up now. I believe he is talking about the Swansea manager, Bob Bradley.
Yes, but this is literally only because of Soccer AM, because it's ingrained in my mind. The Leeds manager came out, I was like, right, I'm not going to be calling it soccer. It is football. I've always called it football. And like the way that he came across is actually, well, as I say, it's easy to take the piss out of an American soccer coach. However, I think he can hold his head high and he speaks well. The only thing that was a bit cringe is after the game, they had that huddle in front of the fans and they were talking about it. You're just thinking, well, yeah, that might be your way. However, if you start losing two or three games and people are going to start taking the piss, it's going to be like a bit cringe to see that.
I saw that. That didn't get rave reviews online, did it? But Leeds, I mean, it's interesting. I mean, he's got two massive, massive home games now. One against Villa, and lo and behold, one against your beloved Canary Fellows there.
So that's three points guaranteed for him at least in those two games.
Again, we'll come on to that at a later point. As you can tell, he's got a little bit of a bee in his bonnet this week, so I do apologise in advance for that. But reasons to be encouraged, I think, if you're a Leeds fan, you know, they love Bielsa to bits, but I think style over substance, and sometimes that style, you need a bit of kind of glue to that to make sure that you keep your head above water. And, you know, if those stats, I mean, look, if you only concede seven shots against Leicester and you're going into games against Villa or Norwich, who are both inconsistent defensively at the moment, there is every reason to believe, especially with the problems that they caused Leicester over the weekend, that they could well pull out of it. But again, it's very tight down there now, very, very tight. And I think if anything shows in the kind of fixture list and who plays who, the next 3 weeks is going to be massive for everyone. So on to Leicester, because again, up, down like a yo-yo, crying about injuries, crying about, you know, not having this, Jamie Vardy, some sort. It's been all over the place for them, and they're rightfully kind of mid-table now. But big, big week for Brendan Rodgers, arguably when he's needed it most, because I think if he dropped any points in these games, he would have come under the microscope. But two wins, two clean sheets, back-to-back wins for the first time since October last year. So massive, you know, we all know the value. Well, not if you're an Norwich fan, but if you're that mid-table club, we all know the value of back-to-back wins in the Premier League and how quickly that can change your outlook.
Back-to-back what? Don't know what you're talking about, mate.
So, you know, Brendan Rodgers has done a lot of save and face, I think, in those two league games. Gives him a bit of breathing space.
I think we alluded to Rodgers deserving at least to the end of the season, because we sort of maybe slated him too much because we thought...
Well, you can speak yourself on that. I'm keeping my opinions to myself. But no, but you're right. Look, I mean, whatever way you look at it, you know, he has, on paper, with those last two results, he has turned the tide a little bit. And, you know, they've got Vardy back now. Maddison was back amongst the goals in the Burnley game with Vardy. Harvey Barnes at it again. I think that's five goals now against Leeds for Harvey Barnes. So he loves the game against Leeds. Most importantly, though, we've spoken a lot about Leicester in terms of their defensive record and that they've been, well, quite shambolic, really, for all sorts of reasons, whether that be injuries, whether that be inconsistencies, or whether that just be down to managerial kind of shortcomings in the defensive side of the game. But this stat blew my mind a little bit, but that is the first time Leicester have claimed back-to-back clean sheets in Premier League games since February 2021.
So this is where Schmeichel loving comes in, you know.
You know, Schmeichel, science shoot. So look, no mistake about it. You know, away to Burnley is a tough gig on paper. And obviously Leeds, the whole new manager bounce, Bielsa going and all that kind of stuff. There was a couple of tricky fixtures there for them to kind of get over. And, you know, Brendan Rodgers, he's done it. And he's got key players back now, Vardy back, regardless if you think he's too old or not.
I think I'm holding my hands up and saying I don't think he is too old. I love the guy. I've always praised the guy, but look at how the last two games he's returned from injury and he's scored. He's just, you know, he's the difference between them winning or losing, really.
No,
and
absolutely. The thing is,
and when he gets Harvey Barnes playing, he gets James Maddison playing, and those trio, regardless of Jamie Vardy's age, I think when you've got those three firing, with obviously the confidence that Vardy brings, yeah, there's no reason why they might not, they could even get a result against Arsenal at the weekend.
Well, I was about to say, these two wins really do give Rodgers a bit of breathing space, because now you look at the next, you know, three league, well, they've got obviously the Europa Conference League in between against Rennes, which aren't going to be easy. But if you look at the Premier League games in isolation, and their next four, away to Arsenal, at home to Brentford, away to Man United, and at home to Palace. Now, Arsenal, we'll get onto them later, but they're in, you know, they are really firing at the moment and gunning for the top four, no pun intended. Brentford, they're obviously down at the bottom and wanting to get out of the mire. So potentially tough on paper there. Away to Old Trafford, I mean, that's almost as easy as going away to Billericay Town at the moment when they've got a fridge freezer as a centre-back. But, you know, again, you never know. And then, you know, Palace being Palace, they can blow hot or cold. So potentially a mixed bag of results there on paper for Brendan Rodgers. And off the back of two back-to-back wins there, I think they're obviously going to be okay. And I think he's probably saved his job, to be honest, because I do think, I think they'll give Man United the game. Brentford at home could be a tough one because they're fighting for it. But you'd like to think they probably get 4 points. Well, I certainly think they'll get 4 points out of the United and Brentford games, which I think, all things considered, whether you agree that they've digressed or not, in what shape or form that takes, then, you know, it is what it is. But he certainly bought himself the time, and the Leicester owners clearly didn't have any desire to pull the trigger. So, you know, he's done what's asked of him. So moving on then to Chelsea, who inflicted a 4-0 defeat against Burnley. A lot of talk about Chelsea for various reasons, plenty of potential distractions for them off the field, but fairly comprehensive and going about their business back in the league after the disappointment in the League Cup.
Well, we're talking on the group chat about Burnley-Chelsea at the weekend, and Burnley's first half, they looked superb, didn't they?
They did.
They could have gone 1-2 up, and it wasn't until the second half that Chelsea started playing, to be honest.
Defensively for Chelsea, we've spoken a lot about the attacking side of it and Lukaku, and I'll come on to that in a second, but defensively, Chelsea at the moment look vulnerable against Palace. I think it's Sarr who was playing kind of left wing-back. That didn't work. He had another dodgy game again. There's news of Christensen going to Barcelona. Rudiger still is not sorted out.
It was the second half that Chelsea just turned it on against Burnley, and I don't think anyone can really say that it was a surprise. But four goals maybe flattered them. But in the first half, if Burnley don't take their chances, then they're not going to you're not going to win your games, are you?
No, this is it. And they had numerous chances to put goals against Chelsea. And as you say, against the big teams, you really have got to take your chances when you get them. Again, show Chelsea's defensive frailties, but as I was saying with Burnley, probably gives reason as to why people have so much confidence in them staying up, because despite what the scoreline suggested, they did give them trouble, but Chelsea were efficient. They came out and they changed it up when they needed to. So they march on. You know, they'll get top four, although Arsenal, Tottenham, we'll get onto those later, but you know,
I think everyone hopes Chelsea drop out, and just because of the fans' attitude the last 2 weeks or so, as well as their fans in general. However, I will keep my opinions to myself.
Well, you know, open forum and all that, but yeah, no, I think they'll march on to Europe now and think about that, and obviously there's all the off-field things that will come with that as well. So no doubt they will be in the news and under the spotlight over the next few weeks. So that is the double game headers out the way. That is the relegation potential fodder out the way. And lo and behold, yes, they are, Cossy. Just a little reference. He's nodding there to Chelsea's fans that they're not in the best books this week for what they did over the weekend. And as Thomas Tuchel rightly pointed out, the message should be unified. It was a message about Ukraine. So to be chanting about Roman Abramovich at the time was absolute bullshit. And yes, Cossy, you're right. And I'm not talking about all Chelsea fans.
99% of those fans are complete wankers.
Moving on. And FYI, probably the ponciest lot that I've actually come across as well. Talking at Selhurst Station about how they're going out for caviar and all this, that and the other for dinner later after the game. Like, get over yourself. Anyway, I digress. Let's not lower ourselves to those in dulcet tones. During all of that, I see that two panels have become three. Here he is.
How are you, boys? How was that first segment? Was it full of wonderful things like Burnley and Chelsea and Leeds and Leicester? Cool.
Jesus Christ, I'd rather eat my own shit.
Just on that, quickly, I did join just as you were wrapping up about Leicester. How odd is it that, what was it, two games ago, we were saying that Leicester could be going down with Brendan Rodgers getting the sack, but if they win their two games in hand, they're perfectly where they should be, in eighth. It's just odd, isn't it?
I was just saying, they were, you know, results at the right time and at the key times. I think he saved himself a lot of grace there, so...
There'll be 1 point off Wolves, so they'll actually correction being ninth. But, I mean, to be fair, that's probably where they should be. So it just goes to show how fucked up this table is. But, yeah, no, I'm here, boys. So happy to join you. Jason, I will leave it in your capable hands to run through this first segment until we get to the typical middle prediction element. So feel free, mate.
Well, next on the list, I don't know where you want to start with this one. It was the big one, wasn't it, up in Manc? City, United.
Is it really the big one anymore? I mean, let's be fair. I would argue that, and this is going to piss Man United fans off, so that's why I'm saying it. I would argue that Man City, Liverpool, you know, is the replacement of the Manchester derby, you know. Gone are the days when Man United, I know Man United got a win in the last three visits to the Etihad, and they'll probably be saying they still make it a big game. But let's be honest, Man United rocking up at the Etihad and winning a game is just a little bit of an inconvenience as to how many points Man City might win the league by. It means nothing anymore. The big game for City is Liverpool since the Klopp Guardiola scenario came onto the scene, and it's the only thing that Man United really are clinging on to, I think.
Well, you can probably liken the Manchester United Manchester City rivalry with how Liverpool and Manchester United rivalry was for a while, in the sense of that Man United were winning pretty much everything. Liverpool were trying, but they were like maybe top four. They've sort of switched sides, because you could probably say that the Chelsea Manchester United rivalry became the Liverpool and Manchester United rivalry throughout that time, where Liverpool weren't winning titles. I know they've only won one, but it's the competing element. You could probably turn around and say that, yes, Man United can turn around and say, oh yeah, but we beat them at the Etihad, we did this, we did that. Well, Liverpool beat Manchester United when they were playing De Sena at left back, scoring a lob against De Gea, when Liverpool were, say, sick and Man United were competing for the league, winning titles, or at least coming second. So you can probably turn around and say that though Manchester United fans think that they're the big rivals with City, you're completely right in saying that Manchester City and Liverpool are the two rivals right now. You'll never replace Manchester United versus Liverpool, because no matter what happens in the world, there's always going to be that rivalry and that hatred between the two clubs. But in terms of actually winning the title and actually competing for silverware, Manchester United are nowhere near Manchester City and Liverpool. They might win the occasional game. They might put a great performance in occasionally. But look at the difference. There's a huge gulf in class.
It's really weird, because when you think of how big that rivalry is, Man United and Man City, I could probably only count on one hand the amount of years whereby the rivalry was actually relevant in regards to a title race. Look, you know, the Wayne Rooney overhead kick and the Balotelli games stand out to me, but I would probably say only, no more than 5 years was that rivalry actually relevant in terms of league table. Like, I can't think how much more? It used to be a walkover for Man United, then it now it's become, let's be honest, a walkover for Man City. Because as I said, yeah, Man United fans might turn around and go, yeah, but we've beaten them. Yeah, and, you know, it's just by how many points they then win the league. And to piss Man United off, if they beat City, they're only giving it to their next fiercest rivals, which is Liverpool. So it must be rubbing them up the wrong way.
A terrible show.
They are so bad, honestly, so bad. And the fact that, as they say, our Man United are down and out because their 37-year-old pensioners aren't in the squad, Ronaldo and Cavani, says a lot. I had one real big point that I wanted to make on this, and I'm glad I'm here for this one, because I saw something earlier that made me lol so hard, and I hate using that word, but I saw something about how PSG want Rashford to replace Mbappe. Oh my God. You know, Alanga's come on, and thank God they got him. That's all I'm going to say, because otherwise they would have been scraping the barrel. But Rashford needs to, I'm sorry, I know it's controversial, he seems a great lad and whatnot, but he is someone that has just completely forgotten his love for football at the moment. And I don't think he can even be, he can't even be asking for a big move at the moment. He's not putting in the effort.
I don't think he can be blamed for it. However, I think the fact that he's had no consistency in what his football upbringing has been for the last, say, 4 or 5 years since Fergie's left, you can't really blame the lad, really, because it's just full of egos, full of mismanagement, full of expensive flops, full of sort of like, I'm the big bollocks around here and, you know, you were really good. But it's just like, well, yes, you were really good as a youngster, but you've never really developed just because you've had no consistency. Then you had obviously Mourinho probably coming and telling that he's a piece of shit like he does with a lot of young talent. So the confidence has probably sucked all out of him. And his head's, if you watch his body language, his head is down the whole time, isn't it?
Yeah, I noted down here because there's been a lot of talk about players leaking stuff, Rashford wanting out, Ronaldo being absent. And then there was an article, I think today, about the big clear out because Pogba's contract is still unresolved, blah, blah, blah. And I wrote down here, great reset. Now, we seemingly talk about Man United and the great reset every transfer window, every summer. Every summer we say they need to reset, get rid of the deadwood, and off they go again. And I'll say it again because I've said it all the time. Until they underpin a manager that has a clear direction and they back that manager 100%, we've seen time and again, you know, Mikel Arteta to a point as an example. Now he's come in and Arsenal have been very up and down, but now he's got consistent 11. They seem to be delivering for where they need to be because they've identified a strategy. They've stuck to it. It's got sticky at points, like finishing mid-table last season, but they've stuck to it and now they're reaping the rewards. The problem you still have at United, and I cannot believe that this is not talked about enough, until you set yourself down with a manager who says, right, these players, and even if it looks scary and he says, I don't want 12 of these players, until someone comes in and says, I do not want these players, they are not my players, they do not fit my system, they will not get it right. You've still got players there from the Solskjaer era, you've still got players there from the Mourinho era, you've still got players, I could be wrong, but from the Van Gaal era. Like, it's just an absolute joke. And there is no one footballing person at that football club that is making that decision.
I'd go one further with this. I don't think people realise how long ago the Fergie era was. Now, Rashford came onto the scene in the 15-16 era, which was 3 years after Fergie was gone. So, all this talk about the Fergie routine and whatnot, these players, Rashford and below, I mean, Rashford might have met Fergie when he was 13, 14, but I don't think he's got the excuse of saying, well, look what I had once, because he would have been 15 when Fergie left. It's been that long. It's 10 years next year that Fergie's been gone. And still, which is the point I'm coming to, and we've mentioned this before, Jace, because I would go one step further that says the first thing that needs to happen is Fergie needs to fuck off. Because when they cut to Fergie and he looks at that monitor that's in front of his little seating area and he goes, for fuck's sake, on that goal that Man City scored, all the players are still shit scared of what's going on above them. And it's the same thing with all the pundits. They all, the class of 92 has gone from being the best thing ever about Man United to present day, the worst thing about Man United. Because Scholes, Ferdinand, Keane, Neville says, I can't believe Neville ended up being as good a pundit as he was. He's as good as, he's at the top of the pack. He barely makes it as, because he's quite, he says it as he is. But Ferdinand, Scholes, Owen, all of them that have previously been at Man United and Fergie need to do one.
But my argument to that is, how much, people say Fergie has power, right? But how much power does he really have when they sit there and Ed Woodward signed the checks? Ed Woodward signed the checks for like 80 million Harry Maguire. Because I'm sure if you ask Alex Ferguson what he thinks of Harry Maguire, I'll tell you what he'd say. He's a bag of shit. And Manchester United, as a collective, and here I'm talking about chief exec and key decision makers that decide on managerial appointments, have they not already done that for themselves by when they appointed Ralph Rangnick saying, this guy will be here until the summer of 2022, and then we will move him upstairs as a director of football role, and then we will get a manager in full-time that we actually really want to coach or manage the team. Now, my problem with that is, say it's Pochettino. Again, he's been linked. But say for argument's sake, you're Pochettino. Phone rings, you want to become Man United manager. Yeah, okay, signs a contract. Ralph Rangnick then moves upstairs as the director of football. But Pochettino will be like, hang on a minute. I didn't have any of this when I was at Spurs. I know what players I want. I know how I want to play. So I'll have my own players. So already, whoever comes in as manager of Manchester United in the summer is up against it, because you talk about Ferguson saying, oh, you know, he's still there and da-da-da. They've got a problem with Ralph Rangnick. And to be honest, what's he done in the game to justify? Ferguson's done 100 times what he has in his managerial career. And so for me, the whole footballing side, forget the business side of it, the footballing side of it is a mess. They signed Bruno Fernandes. People, wow, what a signing. Sancho, what a signing. But these players come in to work under Ole Gunnar Solskjaer. You talk about the class of 92. Solskjaer only got there because he was part of the class of 92. What's Solskjaer ever done in his managerial career? What has he done to deserve to manage the likes of Sancho and all of them? Nothing. On paper, that team should be getting top four easily. They should be vying for second or third, but they don't have the right manager.
They should be going for titles, not being funny. Yeah. If you look at Ronaldo's on £500,000 a week, they signed Jadon Sancho for £80 million. They signed Harry Maguire for £85 million or £90 million or whatever it is. Pogba's on about £500,000 a week, and he cost him what, 74? No, between 80 and 100 million, however long ago it was. Not being funny, if you look at that squad from top to bottom, De Gea's on about what, £380,000 a week. What, Rashford's on £300,000 a week. So if you look at the payroll alone and the infrastructure that they've financed this ridiculous squad with, anything other than winning the league every other season is not good enough. And it's pathetic. If you look at they hate it, but if you look at the model that Liverpool have, yes, they managed to sell Coutinho, but who do you think made Coutinho worth £140 million when they signed them? And look at the signings they brought in. They spent so, so smartly when Liverpool were really in the shit, hadn't won a title for 30 plus years, hadn't done this, hadn't done that. And now they're making the football world look silly when it comes to Manchester United spending £500,000 on one player's wages who's, you know, got a walking stick as he leaves Old Trafford. It's a joke. And the thing is, again, we're ranting about it, but I am loving every single minute of them.
I don't get it. It baffles me. It really does. They deserve everything they get. Every single thing they get. And on that note, I'm sick of talking about them. Scott will be happy to talk about this. Tottenham Everton. Contrast, we've had a manager that knows what he wants, that knows how to coach, come in. And, well, quite frankly, I had down here Tottenham very, very comfortable. Everton, atrocious. I think that is the best way. Tottenham didn't even have to come out of second gear and play them off the park.
To add to that, and even then I was quite disappointed with Spurs because I wanted to see 8, 9, 10, which it could have easily been. Well, I was gutted it was only 5.
It should have been. And I too was very disappointed because I was licking my lips at a kind of double figure scoreline at half on. But I'll let Scott come onto the Spurs part in a sec. But if you're Everton fans right now, you'd be deeply, deeply concerned because they haven't really, that's now only 1 win and 5 league games, I think, for Everton. And they are in deep, deep trouble. I know it's Tottenham, but Tottenham themselves are inconsistent. But, I mean, you look at that back line for a start. That's a, you know, it's a championship back line. That's got, there's no backbone to that whatsoever. The midfield looks slow. And then when you take into account the way Lampard thinks he should play, it just, I don't know, for me it's all wrong. Van der Beek hasn't had the desired effect. Dele Alli can't get a game. I mean, look, where do you start with Everton? It's an absolute mess.
If this podcast was an actual video recording, which you never know, it might eventually become one, who knows, the Kermit the Frog gif would come up right now, or meme, whatever you want, the mind in my own business. And all it would say underneath that Kermit the Frog sipping his tea is Rafa.
I do love how you've done an impression of it on camera as well.
For so you to see, just so that's, you
that's,
know.
That's next, yeah, I know. That's next level of sort of like, yeah, I think whoever, you know, even though it's not a video, everyone can visualise the Rafael Benitez sort of thinking, well, Kermit the Frog hoodie on. I'm just thinking, yeah, that's spot on.
That Everton poll, I mean, when you summarise a point, be careful what you wish for, has there ever been a more relevant quote for Everton Football Club right now? Because I, as the account put it out there, would you have likely been relegated under Rafa Benitez? 81% no, he would have saved us. And now you are, I'm sorry, boys, but I think someone highlighted that. I don't know who it was. It might have, could have even been one of you guys, but am I right in the fact that I saw a stat earlier that all of Everton's remaining games, 12 of them are in the top 12 or something like that?
That's correct, yeah.
So I don't know where that leaves Frank Lampard, but if you look at their fixtures, Wolves, Newcastle, so Newcastle are not, but they are massive games.
Two home games. They're absolutely massive. If he doesn't win for them, he's done. They're toast.
I don't think Lampard's that bright. Not being funny. His footballing brain, just if you look at Gerrard at Villa, he had a couple of dodgy results. I read a tweet that said something like, it's hard not to compare this with Gerrard's initial impact at Villa. He immediately tightened up the defensive side of their game with a compact structure. He may have lost a few games, but he has not been completely torn apart like Everton. The majority of games that he lost was against top teams or when he tried to be more expansive with lots of gaps in the shape. Tightened up again and now with a diamond and now football is flowing again. That's Gerrard. You know, this is just a couple of people off Twitter's opinions. But look at what is Everton? Like, what is their style? What is their formation? What is their structure? What is anything there?
Just to quickly highlight before, Jace, you come in, because for anyone listening to this, it might be worth you putting on a bet here. Bearing in mind, Everton have got 2 games in hand.
Please bet responsibly.
Such as putting on this bet, because this is responsible betting. Everton's won. the only two teams they've got to face that are in the bottom half from Leicester down are Brentford and Newcastle. Every other team is Wolves and above.
They've got to play Palace in a league game, haven't they?
Well, unless it's been rescheduled, then obviously that might come into play, because I think there might even be a Burnley game that's got to come in here. I don't know. But they've got Wolves, Newcastle, Palace in the FA Cup. Then in April, they've got West Ham, Man United, Liverpool, Chelsea. Then it's Leicester, Brentford and Arsenal. I'm sorry, but if Everton don't get, as Jason says, points against Wolves, Newcastle and Brentford, they are done.
The current odds to get relegated on Ladbrokes are 14 to 5.
Bet responsibly, put 100 on it.
I'll tell you what would worry me as an Everton fan, right? And we'll cover this game in more detail shortly. In fact, next. Compare, so an equal like-for-like on this game, Tottenham-Everton, is Watford-Arsenal. Compare Watford's attitude and application against Arsenal, not just because they scored two goals, but the running. Compare that to Everton. Now, as I said, just touching on Spurs, they never got out of second gear. It was so easy. I mean, I think it was the second, was it the one that Harry Kane was played clean through? Two passes.
That was Doherty as well, of all people. They made him look like Danny Alves in that game. Matt Doherty's two passes were just ridiculous.
The gaps between defence and midfield lines were just, it was criminal. And they touched on it in the game, saying that Everton were a back three going forward, I think it was, and a back four defensively. But again, that back line is just, if you're any player, if you're any team at the moment and you've got to face Everton and you look at that back line of, if you've got pacey wingers for a start, York, Targeton, Seamus Coleman for a start, double up on him because he'll get round rings round. And then you've got Mason Holgate and I can't remember who was centre-back now. Michael Keane, sorry. They're just abysmal. Absolutely.
The other thing I want to highlight before Everton fans, because we said we were going to target Lampard and Rodgers, and Rodgers has got off lightly this week. So, you know, we're going in hard on Lampard here. Everyone will firstly turn around and go, well, with Rafa, it wouldn't have been any better. You know, look how many games we lost. Frank Lampard has a full Everton squad at this moment in time. At one point, Rafa Benitez had no Richarlison, no Calvert-Lewin, no Gomez, no Holgate, no Mina, no Doucouré. He had none of them. I mean, have you ever seen Calvert-Lewin and Richarlison look as bang average as they did in that game yesterday? I mean, Calvert-Lewin got dragged off after, 70 minutes because they couldn't handle it? And to go in at half-time, especially when all the pundits were saying, oh, Lampard's going to be giving it to them at half-time, you know, say, and they come out 40 seconds later, and let's be fair, that Reguilon goal, there could have been four Spurs players that could have tapped that ball in before it reached him.
The other thing that would concern me as an Everton fan is you've got Lampard coming out saying, I thought I had the boys on side. I thought I geared them up and I thought I had the belief in them that they could do it. Clearly, it's not worked. I've got to go back and, you know, try and get them up for it. I mean, again, with Everton, we've said it time and again, haven't we? Recruitment, recruitment, recruitment. And that doesn't just stop at players. That also stops at managers. My biggest fear as a Palace fan when we were linked with Lampard is the fact that defensively, as he showed at Chelsea, he hasn't got a clue how to see out a game or to shut up shop. He hasn't got a clue how to strike that balance.
Which is quite mental, considering Mourinho, in his heyday, was his manager for so long.
I don't know what the answer is for Everton, but if you're Palace, if you don't get through to the FA Cup semi-final, Jesus Christ, because Everton really cannot afford to take their eye off the ball in the league, I don't think. And again, let's talk about Spurs, because we've spoken about a lot about Everton, but I mean, Conte, the fact that he could take off the players he did at the times he did, just showed that how easy it was. Like,
that's probably the first time he's had the luxury of doing that, because Spurs are usually so reliant on players. Well, like, everyone knows the big guns, and they have to play in the full 90 minutes, even against a team like, I don't know, Crawley in the Cup or whatever. They usually have to play their squad because, well, they're the best players in their squad because they just don't have any second string players. But he could have brought on one of us three and still won that game 5-0.
Can I just say, how good is Kulusevski? The three we've signed from Serie A, and they go on about Serie A being a bang average league, and we've brought in Romero, who is now being touted as one of the better centre-backs in the Premier League at the moment this season. Bentancur has come in and absolutely bossed that whole midfield. And Kulusevski, the man that they said, you know, was really slow, big and whatnot, is just the missing piece I never thought we needed on that wing.
So few things there. Romero, absolutely brilliant. But I had noted here, Romero, Kulusevski, who, I'll be honest, through my knowledge of Serie A and foreign Roma, he wasn't that greatly received at Juve because he had injury problems, he didn't get going, he didn't really get a chance. Atalanta, he was good. Juve never got going at all. So for me, the jury was out on him. I was a bit kind of, not underwhelmed, but I was a bit like, you know, whatever. But he looks like an absolute world-beater. And what puts him into perspective, and I applaud him, because no bastard other player in the Premier League does this, not even on my team or anyone's team, but when he could have went down on the floor for a free kick, it would have been, he looked around him, saw that he had an opportunity, and he stayed on his bloody feet and he got the ball in. And outside of that, genuinely, he was absolutely immense, but Everton were equally as shit. And the other thing I think we should talk about, because he did nothing for 8 months and all of a sudden he's back on the scene. 8 months, that's a bit of an over-exaggeration because we're not in April yet, but he did nothing for about 5 months and all of a sudden he's back on the scene. Harry Kane, not just striker, number 10.
And the thing is that the other work that Harry Kane is doing as well, it's not just a striker. I know that people are saying, oh, will he overtake what Alan Shearer did? Don't get me wrong, Alan Shearer was an incredible player. But what he does as well is Alan Shearer plus about 1,000 more. He can pass, he can tackle, he works hard. Look at the ground he covers. He can dribble, he can do everything. But last night, right, I was coming back from London on the train. I was watching it on my iPhone and like, you know, just a small little screen, like just on the carriage. And we were delayed by about an hour and a half because of fucking shit on the trains. But I was literally loving the delay just because I could watch the whole game. And I was just like, the people near me must have thought that I was a Spurs fan. Because I was like, you know, I was just absolutely buzzing and just thinking, this is, I'm watching Spurs, man. I don't even like Spurs and I don't even like many of their fans, but you know.
Do you know what?
No offense, Scott.
Everyone, just quickly before we move on, Harry Kane's having a bad season apparently, and yet he's 2 goals away from being in second spot ahead of Diego Jota, who's having an absolute world-class season. So it kind of puts it into perspective. When you see the amount of passes he's making at the moment, I'm surprised he's only got 3 assists at the moment, Kane, but if this is a bad season, then you really are wondering, you know, what he could do. And they were talking about this on Talk Sport, like, can Kane beat Shearer's record staying at Spurs? And they were kind of highlighting that, well, yeah, with Conte, probably, you know, I can't see why not. He would have to get 20 goals a season for the next 4 years to go above Alan Shearer, I think it is at the moment. I don't know. I mean, I don't know where it leaves Harry Kane at the moment, but he doesn't look like a player that's thinking about a move at this moment in time. And when you see how he was at the beginning of the season, that's the Kane you know that wanted a move. So for him to come out in this form, you're kind of wondering what's going on. But he's been fantastic and deserves to be second to Salah, in my opinion. Salah's just had an unbelievable season. Them two, at this moment, I'd probably say are the two best players in the whole Premier League. I know De Bruyne gets a lot of plaudits and whatnot, but the injuries for De Bruyne, I think, are keeping him a bit to the side at this moment in time. But I'd say Salah and Kane are unbelievable.
Two questions for you, Scott, since you're the Spurs rep on this pod. Number one, have Spurs finally turned the corner? And will they become more consistent?
No, we've got two games whereby they've got 4 days to prepare, so we're probably going to lose them two. Got Man United next, which I'll be disappointed if we don't beat them 6-1 like we did before. I think we can finish above Man United. I just don't know if at the moment, you know, when we come to the next game, which I'm sure you're about to touch on, I just don't know if Arsenal are going to drop. That's the issue. You know, I can see us winning games and then probably slipping up against West Ham or Brighton in one of those two games. I'd be Brighton at the moment. I'd be disappointed if we couldn't get more points. Sorry, Seagull side. But they are looking a shambles. So I honestly don't think we've turned a corner yet, you know, because we were bashing them off after Leeds and then they go and lose, you know, the way they did to Borough and stuff like that. So I don't think we turned a corner. I just think Tottenham are the bipolar team of the Premier League at the moment.
Second question for you, final thing quickly. If Tottenham secure top four, because Conte has said that's basically their trophy and objective for the season, if they get top four, Kane stays in his element, they get a whopping great big offer for Kane. Based on the recruitment of Romero, Bentancur and Kulusevski, the future's looking bright for Spurs, isn't it?
I'm telling you now, if Conte stays, Kane, it's because Kane's staying. Or vice versa. If Kane says he's staying, it's because Conte's staying. If Conte goes, unless Poch comes in or whatever, there's something up their sleeve, then Kane's gone. So one will be the signal for the other. I don't even think Spurs finishing fourth will decide if Kane stays or not. If we finished fifth and were in the Europa League but still had Conte, and I know Conte would do what he does with Inter for Spurs, and he will treat that Europa League like it's the be-all, end-all, because I love Conte's mentality of finishing fourth is an embarrassment. And, you know, we're about to come on to an argument in a second that was on TalkSport that's gone viral with Laura Woods and Jamie O'Hara, I'm sure. That argument in itself was an embarrassment, really, because no one should ever be celebrating finishing fourth. And that's what I love about Conte. But obviously, it's an aspiration where we are at the moment. It would be a great achievement if we can get there, considering Man United spent all that money and whatnot. So, yes, I would like to think Kane will stay. I mean, can you honestly believe that if Kane can stay with Nuno at the helm after losing Mourinho, he can't stay with Conte?
But also, you've got to think of his age and the fact that he hasn't won any trophies, that he might be thinking, though I can see the potential in this, though I love it, I need to win something. And if I can't see myself winning, if it's a transition with Spurs going on from winning nothing to winning something, it might take 3 years. And by then, what, he'll be 32?
I think for Spurs, and I think I mentioned it last week, I think for Spurs, either way, whatever happens at the end of the season, providing they finish top four, it's a win-win situation. Kane stays, Paratici recruits like he has with the three individuals like we've discussed today, then Spurs are conceivably stronger for next season. Or Kane goes and they've got whatever money they've put aside already for Conte plus that 150 million and you've got Paratici working with Conte. And again, I just think they'll be in a lot better position to win trophies either way. So I actually think Spurs have gone about it the roundabout way and probably should have got Conte in earlier, but they're in a lot better position than they were under Nuno, that's for sure. Anyway, moving on to the other side of North London. Watford Arsenal, closer game than I anticipated, I'll be honest. And that's why I alluded to Everton fans needing to worry. But Watford aside for a second, because as Scott says, it has a debate that has gone viral via TalkSport. Laura Woods and Jamie O'Hara debating whether or not Arsenal have overachieved this season. And I'll open up on this and then let you two boys kind of come in. And I'm going to say I agree with Laura Woods and 100% based on the fact that they finished kind of mid-table and limped out of on a whim last season, given the fact that I was laughing at the fact that they signed the likes of Ben White and Aaron Ramsdale, and yet, you know, sitting here in fourth. Added to that, in January, they got rid of Aubameyang and they had, what, they've got one striker on the books in Lacazette and Mkhitaryan who wants out. I'm going to say Arteta, considering his experience and for where he's at as a manager as well, that plus the recruitment and the squad available to him, when you look at the squad, and I think this is important, Arsenal are fourth, Manchester United in fifth. I think when you look at that and that they're a point ahead of Manchester United with three games in hand, I'm saying it, they have massively overachieved this season.
I think it's an argument that when it fits the narrative, it works, because if it was at the bottom of the table and you spent like Arsenal had, with people criticise Newcastle for spending, they've done exactly the same thing. Now, to caveat that and to argue why I understood one massive point is, when Arsenal spent that money, I remember we were struggling to breathe because we were laughing so much at who they'd bought. So you can't laugh about spending 30 million on Ramsdale and 50 million on Ben White and take the piss out of them when it fits the narrative, but then turn around when they're finishing fourth and looking really strong, say, yeah, but you spent money. Because if I'd have turned around and said to you, you can spend 150 million on those players, you'd turn around and go, fuck off. Like, we'll get relegated with them signings. He has done something with Ramsdale that no one else would have ever done.
Well, let's put that into perspective, right? So you're right. So they spent 150 million, an average age of 23. And I'm just going to reel the names off. Ben White of Brighton, who even struggled in that Brighton team at numerous points, £53 million. £53 million. Let that sink in. So Arsenal Football Club, who have just finished mid-table, have gone into the summer to say, yep, we want top four again. £53 million on Ben White of Brighton. £25 million on Aaron Ramsdale from Sheffield United, who, by the way, has been relegated twice in the last two seasons prior to joining Arsenal Football Club. They then, in my eyes, at the time, gambled massively, £31.5 million on Martin Odegaard, who, when they had him initially on loan, showed glimpses of what he was capable of, but nowhere near as often as he should have done. When you look at those players and you compare those players to the signings that, say, Manchester United made, for example, I mean, everyone was laughing. Everyone was saying, oh, Arsenal was signed up for mid-table again. They are not signings that scream, we're going to grab hold of top four. We're going to get Champions League places. We're going to win an FA Cup. We're going to win a League Cup. Then you add, in context, Arteta's been there, what now, three seasons, and he's relatively young in his coaching career. I think what he's achieved this season with that group of players, and considering he's had his own, like at one point we were talking about in kind of October, end of September, October, him losing his job, and if Vieira carried on the way it was at Palace, Vieira going to Arsenal. You know, he has got through the rough patch, because in September they looked really, really dodgy at one point. He's got through the rough patch. He's stood firm in his decisions. He got a lot of criticism for seemingly ousting out Aubameyang, but he had his reasons for doing it and he's got rid of him. In January, I was sitting here thinking, I think I was saying to Kossi, it was the January window show we covered, how the hell are they going to get top four and compete with United and West Ham when they've only got Lacazette as a recognised striker, who also, if he could, wants out of the football club. And I mean, look, fair play to them.
I just think Jamie O'Hara's point, I get what he was trying to say, but he couldn't elaborate any further than Arsenal shouldn't be, they're Arsenal Football Club. That argument applies to nearly every team but Liverpool and Man City at this moment in time, because Chelsea shouldn't be in third place. Manchester United shouldn't be in what, wherever they are, fifth? Because they're Manchester United. Tottenham shouldn't be seventh because they got to the Champions League final and they were Tottenham Hotspur. You know, Leicester shouldn't be 12th because they won the league once. That argument can be thrown around everywhere. And I'm sorry, in context, and it seems weird that I'm defending Arsenal in this point, but at the beginning of the season, when everyone was saying, where are Arsenal finishing? I don't reckon more than 20% of football supporters would have had Arsenal in the top four because Man United had spent big money. Spurs were Spurs. You know, Arsenal haven't really done anything with Spurs for the last few seasons. But they are now sitting 3 points ahead of Spurs with a game in hand. You talk about Man United not having a plan or a vision. Arsenal have a vision at the moment because you're telling me Saka's not one of the best under 21 players in European football. He is. Smith Rowe, brilliant. Odegaard looks like he's achieving what people thought he could. Martinelli's looking great if he can keep himself fit. And the biggest compliment to Arteta is, how on earth has he got Arsenal Football Club only conceding 29 goals all season? With that back line that we were pissing our pants over at the beginning of the season.
Well, I was going to say, if you remember at the beginning of the season, was it Brentford, Palace? Like, they were conceding goals at the night. I remember the Brentford game in particular because I think it was the first or second game of the season. And the analysis of Ben White in particular, they were like, no chance, no chance. I mean, and look at it now. It's phenomenal.
That highlights then, doesn't it, that the coach is improving the players. If he performed like that in the first few games and he's now looking rock solid, then that surely only adds further ammunition to what Mikel Arteta is doing over there.
100%. And if he gets them in the Champions League this year, I'll be really intrigued to see what that means for their transfer business in the summer. I never thought I'd say it, but I think the future looks bright for them.
It's difficult to dislike them at the minute, to be honest, which I dislike myself for. You know what I mean?
That is very, but, it's very
but
true.
But the thing is, just because he's turned his own team from a shower of shit at the start of the season to a team that is competing for the top four, I think you've got to have a little bit of a balance with it in the sense of, well, that was your team, that was your squad, that was the money you've spent, and it's been your team for the last 3 years. So I think they do deserve credit with a little bit of a perspective of, well, he did have them in the shit anyway, and it was his team that was in the shit, and it was his squad that was in the shit, and it was pretty terrible at the start of the season. But now, yeah, full. I think he deserves credit, don't get me wrong, but it's just like, well, now you're doing what you're expected to do. You know what I mean?
Yeah, 100%, 100%. So, no, fair play to them. They are where they are. As for Watford, very, very quickly, reasons to be cheerful, I'd say. If they can put in performances like that for the rest of the season, then, well, look, they've got a better chance of staying up than Frank Lampard and Everton.
And what a goal, by the way.
Oh, that quality of goals overall in that game, by the way.
Insane.
Really outrageous. If I'm a Watford fan right now, I'm looking squarely at Everton and thinking, who would I rather have my changing room, Roy Hodgson or Frank Lampard? I'll leave it there because I think that says it all as to where both clubs currently are at the moment. Moving on very quickly, real surprise, but West Ham have gone off the ball slightly over the last few games.
Going to West Ham as well, if they would have spent big in January, top four was theirs to lose. So if they would have spent big, like they said, they promised their fans, West Ham could have been about, say, 5 points clear in the top four. Yeah. So in a way, they've got themselves to blame. Like, we all predicted that West Ham were going to gradually start coming out away from the top four because they're not the big, like, six or seven. However, they've sort of got themselves to blame for it.
No, they have. And we've said it all season long. Eventually, it'll be squad depth that is their Achilles heel. And, you know, luckily, no player has popped their Achilles heel. We spoke a lot about Antonio, but, you know, they have... They are where they are, and it's mostly down squad depth. Liverpool win 1-0, important win to keep the title race open. Put pressure on City again. Mane with a goal just before half time.
West Ham had a couple of good chances. Liverpool could have easily scored three or four in the same in the same breath. Diaz not really again. Much to say. A bit of a boring game. Diaz, as you were about to say, was absolutely brilliant. He's going to go on to potentially win Liverpool that league. However, that's one to talk about in about five games' time.
I mean, I couldn't have said it better myself, to be fair. He's kind of summarised it all in a nutshell there, really. There wasn't much to talk about. It was fairly convincing. And that's the end of that. And now we are going to switch to Scott and, Cossie's favourite part of the podcast.
Yeah, let's make this fairly quick then, seeing as we dedicated quite a lot of time to the first segment. So predictions would be the first thing we touch on. Had a bit of a bad week, boys. You know, wouldn't say this is the week you'd want to put an accumulator on because we didn't do so well. Villa, Southampton. Obviously, that didn't go like we thought. Mind you, Jason and Cookie, you said Villa would win, just not to the emphatic fashion that they did. You said it would be 3-2. Cookie said it would be 2-1. So you both obtain a point there. Norwich, Brentford. We'll get to that one in a bit because none of us got any points. Cossie's just chewing a Werther's as I say that. I was the only one that gave Brighton a bit of credit, and to Jason's delight, it obviously didn't come to fruition, but you all got a point by saying Newcastle would win.
Brighton credit, bloody hell.
You, Cookie, and Cossie all got a point, so you're slowly gaining, not to the amount you would like. And then I was the only one that said Chelsea would get a win over Burnley. The rest of you gave Burnley a draw or a Burnley win. I said it would be Chelsea 2-1 because I couldn't see them slipping up any further. So I got a point there. So yeah, not a great week. That leaves Cossie on 44, Jason on 45, Cookie on 46, myself on 59. Right. Now then. Obviously, we weren't expecting Cookie to be absent. Fucked off to the darts and tested positive.
The little bastard.
So that leaves us with a wheel of wonder. And I'm gonna approach it this way. Three topics. One of us will get the FA Cup. One of us will get the Champions League. The other will get the Europa League. How about that? We'll ignore the Conference League because Spurs aren't in it anymore, so it's no longer relevant to me. And some of the teams, I can't pronounce their names either. So, you know, I don't fancy seeing Jason for a minute trying to announce some of them. So, we're going to have a Wheel of Wonder tournament. Who wants to go first? Cossie does. Fair enough.
So Europa League. You will screw me over. I think I could get a minute from the other two. However, if I do get a Europa League, prepare to be cringeworthily entertained at my expense.
Let's see what you're getting. You have the Champions League, my friend. I know you're currently squeaky bum time at the moment watching one of the games because I saw you nearly bust a nut when a goal went in. So I'll time you. Starting in 3, 2, 1, go.
Well, I'll talk about the games that we're currently watching or being played right now, and I'm watching one of them, which is the Liverpool Inter game, which has been really entertaining, and Inter are currently winning 1-0 with 10 men. However, in the Bayern Munich game, after the first leg result being 1-1, Bayern have absolutely smashed the second leg, albeit through two penalties from Lewandowski, seemingly the German league equivalent of Ivan Toney. However, he actually scores other goals. He has got a hat trick. Let's not talk about the Norwich game yet. But they are currently winning 7-1, so I think it's fairly obvious who's going to go through from that. However, Inter currently have 9 minutes left to equalise against Liverpool. Well, not equalise on aggregate. However, it goes on to tomorrow's games, which are Man City versus Sporting and Real Madrid versus PSG. I think all of us have got our eyes on Real Madrid and PSG, considering the last result was 1-0 to PSG. So, yeah, I think that's my minute up, and I didn't really cover much other than what's going on right now. So I'll take that as not embarrassing myself too much.
So we got a quarter of the Champions League.
That's all we needed. That's all we needed.
Oh, okay. We didn't need to focus on the other games over the other side. So, Jace, that leaves you with the Europa League and FA Cup.
I really don't want the Europa League.
The FA Cup is quite a nice one.
Let's have a look.
I'm going to get Europa League, I know I am. It's the one I don't want. Hey!
You got the FA Cup. I'll count you in then. Starting in 3, 2, 1, you're off.
Well, 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 what can I say, boys? The FA Cup is not for everyone, is it? I think out of all of our teams here, there is only one survivor. And my God, if Palace don't make the semi-final after being drawn against Everton at Selhurst Park in the quarterfinals, didn't get my ticket, you arseholes, because the website crashed earlier today. So I have to watch it on the sofa. But, you know, early kickoff, Selhurst Park, in between two big games for Everton in the league. I mean, there's only one winner there. As for that, congratulations. Up the Borough. Conte being Conte, he can't do it a midweek. My God, I must have a word with his wife. She must be really feeling sorry for herself. Borough get the home tie against Chelsea. Saints made it through against West Ham pretty comfortably. Got a draw against City. Forest beat Huddersfield yesterday, so they carry on strong. A home tie against Liverpool. That is, for me, the pick of the bunch in the last day. As for the rest of yous, I mean, well done to Boreham Wood for getting as far as they did. Pushed Everton close. Luton Town, very unlucky, by the way.
Time! Yeah, thanks for that. I'd rather have that in a Wheel of Wonder, to be honest. So I'll take that one all day long. Brush over that. Don't need to talk about that one. Leads me with the Europa League joys.
Are you ready?
Yep.
Ooh, 3, 2, 1, go.
Well, all eyes will be no doubt on the big tie between Sevilla and West Ham. Injury-ridden Sevilla, must I add. So West Ham will be hoping they can take advantage of that one. There's other big ties in there. The big one obviously being Rangers getting through and getting quite a fair draw in the next round after overcoming the odds against Dortmund in the previous round. So massive two games they were. That's Rangers' season done. Going forward, you've got Braga, Monaco, Porto, Lyon, which is a bit of a throwback. Atalanta, Leverkusen is the one I would say. If you're a neutral, you're in for a banging game there. Two similar teams in their respective leagues. Barcelona, everyone wants them to go out to Galatasaray. And obviously Leipzig getting a bye after Spartak Moscow were given the boot out of the Europa League. And Real Betis and Frankfurt being the final fixture of the tie. Looking forward to the games. A lot of teams there that have the potential to win it. Kind of makes it interesting.
Very interesting. Thank you very much. Very good. You did well there, all things considered.
To be honest, some of them games there I quite like because they are literally, they strike me as like the future. Betis, Frankfurt, Sevilla West Ham's a great game. Atalanta Leverkusen's a great game. Porto Lyon back in its day would have been a great game. So, yeah, it's the Europa League getting some credibility.
Well done. Wheel of Wonder there was, did pretty well there. Anyway, I'm sorry. I'm no saint. I'm the villain. And that leads us nicely into Aston Villa Southampton. See what I did there, lads? Yeah, no, you can pay me later for that one. Aston Villa, I don't think, as Scott alluded to, we necessarily saw this one coming, but Aston Villa 4, Southampton 0.
Southampton have it in them, though, didn't they? I mean, just when you think they weren't going to have one, and then they do. I mean, every season, what is wrong with them?
We were praising them last week. We were absolutely singing their praises, thinking, oh, this isn't going to happen against Southampton, is it? Then lo and behold, they meet just Steven Gerrard, who was getting a bit of criticism from us lot, and they smash him. And doesn't Ings score as well? So, again, he's making us look silly.
And talking of making us look silly, I hold my hands up. Philip Coutinho, I said, he's washed, he's done, he's finished. He ain't going to do what he's going to do. He's on big wages. What a waste of money. That game in particular added to the rest of it. He has made me look very, very silly.
He's rolling back the years, isn't he?
He was immense.
With Villa, I mean, I'm still not buying it. But then again, they're another one that, you know, win two games. They're sitting on 39 points, which is one off Wolves. Looks quite good. It's just a weird league. I mean, I just don't get it. I really don't get how teams like Villa and Brighton could still end up finishing eighth. How is that possible?
Oh, don't worry about Brighton. That they won't.
Yeah, all right. We'll get to Brighton in a minute. But yeah, I just don't. I'm not buying Villa. I think they're another one that strike me as being a little bit bipolar at the moment. He might get them sorted. Southampton, though, didn't see it coming at all. You worry, didn't you, sometimes with Southampton, whether that kind of result could rot them, bearing in mind they hadn't lost a game since January. So
whatever happens for them now, even if that did, I mean, they're currently overachieving based on where everyone thought they'd be at the beginning of the season. Let's be honest, everyone thought they'd be down there in a relegation fight. So overall with Southampton, if you said to them at the beginning of the season, you'd be mid-table in the quarterfinal of the FA Cup, I, for one, would have pissed myself laughing and said, get off whatever you're smoking or sniffing. But they are where they are, and whatever happens now at the end of the season, I think he's done a good job. Aston Villa themselves have been hot and cold recently, so a big win for them. Probably the rocket the players needed. Gerrard's come out, and there's been a lot of rumours about outgoings, interestingly, at Villa in the summer, some of which that would surprise you, some not. But yeah, so good result for Gerrard, much needed. And yeah, Southampton will just march on, as the old song goes. Unless you boys have got anything to add, we can move on to my favourite.
Here comes squeaky voice, edit.
Yeah, we're not talking about the Looney Tunes. You can shove your squeaky voice up your ass, because we are going to talk about and put pay to the fact that Newcastle are no longer, in my eyes, relegation contenders.
Nope, they're dumb.
They haven't lost in five games. Brighton, on the other hand, in five games, have lost four in a row. So I would just like to remind them all of the Mind the Gap tweets they were tweeting in February about how they're only, or even Glenn Murray was touting them as being one striker away from the top six in Europe.
Well, let's just look at the Premier League table here, lads. So we've got, what, West Ham 6th, Tottenham 7th, yeah, Wolverhampton 8th, Southampton 9th, oh, 10th, Crystal Palace, Villa 11th, oh, Villa 11th, Leicester 12th, oh, we're getting there. That's it. Brighton and Hove Albion, 13th place.
Who would have thought that with one more game, if Newcastle win that next game, they'll only be 2 points off Brighton? I mean, that's saying something, isn't it?
In all seriousness, to Brighton, and can we say the bubble is burst? Now, ironically, I'm not making this up. It's on BBC Sport, so I'm not making a joke, but an inquest into not Brighton's players, but Brighton's form, and has the bubble burst at the Amex? And the answer they say is no, no, no. But a little stat for you here. So the defeat against Newcastle was the fourth consecutive Premier League game they'd lost in the space of 15 days. And that is as many as they'd lost in their opening 23 matches. So they only lost four games in their opening 23 games. And then, since that point, which spans over a six-month period, by the way, so August to Feb, and then since that point, in 2 weeks, they've lost four games. So it just shows how much things can change very, very quickly. And ironically, it's the same old story of Brighton. Plenty of chance creation, plenty of so-called positive potable, or whatever they call it down there on the coast, but no reward.
I think the problem with Brighton, it's going to come back and sting them now. But like when you look at Crystal Palace and you've got Zaha and Gallagher all on the same amount of goals as Brighton's star striker, and this is Morpé in good form this season, You have to scroll down, and can you believe at this moment, unless I'm blind and I've missed something, but I'm pretty sure I have just scrolled past Danny Ings before I've found another Brighton player in top goals scored this season. Yes, that is correct. I have scrolled past Danny Ings on 5 goals before I've even hit McAllister of Brighton on 4. So when we talk about Trossard being incredible this season, oh, here he is, number 59, tied 59, Trossard on 4 goals, you know, tied with Fabinho, Mr. Defensive Mid, Benteke, Mr. Start for 5 minutes a game. What's going? Dan James, reject, 4 goals. I mean, you get where I'm coming from. This is poor for Brighton. And unfortunately, that arrogance is going to cost them this season because they just needed someone to do the job with more pay. And they probably would have been, you know, finally laughing. But it looks like Cossy, me and you and Cookie will be putting money into the pot and taking him to McDonald's.
I was literally going to say, not only is it going to cost Brighton, it's also going to cost us because we're probably going to choose a half-decent restaurant and Jason's going to order the finest scallops for starters, the finest fillet of steak for mains, and the finest cheese board, because that tends to be the most expensive thing on a dessert menu. And we're going to be having to cough up, you know, for about a 65, 70 quid meal for Jace.
Do I get extra for the budget if we reach the FA Cup final?
Fuck off. What are you talking about? Can we just agree, Jace, that if you finish above Brighton, but Norwich survive relegation... Me, you and Cookie have to pay for Cossie's meal.
If that happens, I will come down to Lowestoft, find the nearest cliff on Kirkley and jump the hardest I've ever jumped.
Oh, my word.
If Norwich stay up, we finish above Brighton and dare we win the FA Cup, that will be Norwich City and Cossie undoing and upscaling and upstaging the fact that Palace have had a mental season.
Let's roll into that, because as long as, let's be fair, as long as they've got Gibson at the back, it's not going to happen, is it, Cos?
Well, but hang on a second. Let's just... Scott? I think we just put ourselves on mute here. Cossie, my thoughts are with you. Ivan Tony sends his regards. I think he listens to this podcast. Cossy, the stage, you're obviously very stung, you know, the stage is yours.
You've got 5 minutes.
5 minutes to do what to myself? But jump off the cliff that Jason spoke about in Kirkley? Well, what can I say? I am fully hoping that during the editing process of this cast, a podcast, that every single embarrassing taking a piss edit is put over what I'm saying right now, because I was thinking today, how many letters of the alphabet can I get of adjectives to describe how pissed off, how embarrassed, how shocking everything was. And the thing is, well, A, abysmal, B, a bunch of bastards, C, cowards, D, you know, I could continue, but in all honesty, it was pathetic, it was cowardly, it was shocking, it was cringe, it was lacklustre. Think of a word of negativity, and that was me on Saturday, because I genuinely, as much as I do slate Norwich as well as try and back them up when I think we've got a case, and I see Scott noting down in his notepad how many adjectives I'm using. This should be a show in itself. But I went into that game with so much optimism. Like, again, I'm expecting the laughing edit to go over what I'm saying right now. But we beat them away, and I thought, well, into that game, I think they'd lost 9 out of the last 11, something pathetic like that. And I thought, well, I still think they're coming down with us. Again, play this at the end of the season with Lappin. Doesn't Lappin edit, but I just don't know where to begin. I think we had a golden opportunity within 2 minutes that I put again on the group chat saying that you've got to score that. I think I repeated for about 5 minutes after that with my head in my hands thinking you've got to score that because it's going to bite us back in the arse. And what happened? It bit us in the arse. And who of all people did it happen to? Tapping Tony, obviously perfectly placed. Good cross by Ericsson. Easy tapping at the back post. That's what happens when you don't mark your man. And then what do I say about Tony? Give him a penalty and he'll score. And he happens to get two of them. One of them, Ben Gibson, decided to just kick a player in his face who, after Tony scoring the penalty, came over to our fans and told us to fuck off. To be honest, I completely agree with you, mate. So, yeah. And then the second one, Tony... honestly, if you could see their faces right now, you'd be... you don't know whether to laugh or cry, just like me right now. But Tony completely, again, played Gibson, a very, very terrible defender, and won a penalty, which was a penalty all day long.
Yeah, but Billy Gilmore put in a great performance, so
don't even get me started. At the time where we think, oh, we've got a bit of fight in us now, we're playing some good football, we're doing this, we're doing that, I then find out that Billy Gilmore actually has a clause in his contract that the more he plays for us, the less money we have to give to Chelsea for the loan fee. And then I can't even be bothered to find the stats on our points per game with him in the team compared with our points per game without him in the team. Chelsea, you may absolutely praise him and he might go on to be a very good player, but for us, he has been absolutely shocking. His attitude stinks. He cannot do everything that he's supposed to be doing. And he is one of our main issues, especially when it comes to Delia having to give an extra 50 quid to Chelsea if he doesn't play most games. And also, it seems that where I sit was the only two Billy Gilmore fans in the whole Norwich section, because when he got subbed and walked past us, I said, I probably should have kept my mouth shut, but I said, well done, Billy, you're our best player. And then I got a barrel of abuse from these two fans. And I was just thinking, these two fans must not have Twitter, because every single person that I see slates him. And like, I don't like to see hates of players, but honestly, when you're paying what we're paying to see this shit, and the attitude and the terrible performances that we're getting from him and as an individual and our whole squad as a whole, I got absolute pelters. And I was just thinking, seriously? Yeah, but he's from the Chelsea Academy. Yeah, so's half of London that never actually played for Chelsea. And if you look at any possibility of, if you look at the Academy of what Chelsea have, then Gallagher obviously completely out-trumps him in every single way. Added to that, he said, oh, but he plays for Scotland. That's more than half our other players that are internationals for our team. Well, half our players play for Scotland anyway, so that's wrong. We've got Tim Krul for the Netherlands, who's had a pretty decent career for Netherlands, and we've got Pukki, who's the top goal scorer in Finland. So if you're going to try and use Scotland as a markup as to how amazing Billy Gilmore is, then just obviously get in the absolute biggest bin and never return. But I am not looking forward to Thursday, because not only do I have to watch our shower of shit team play again, I have to be sat near these six-fingered idiots that turn around and shout shit to me when I'm well within my right, as 95% of Norwich fans are, to say, hang on a minute, Billy Gilmore's just not very good, is he? You know, but like I said, if we would have scored from that Rasica chance within the first 2 minutes, I think that could have been a completely different game. But again, fair play. They got two penalties, fully deserved. Kick someone in the face and have a late tackle against a centre forward who's obviously going to look for a really clumsy shit defender in what we've got at least 10 of in our whole squad. It's, oh yeah, what can I say? We're down.
Vladimir Putin, if you would like to press the button, please do so now. Just put a rattle out of misery, especially costly, bless his heart.
I do think Brentford are still going down, because they are still going down, mark my words.
So that
if
is...
they don't, it's going to be classic. So classic.
That is Norwich, Brentford, Watford. No, so four teams going down this year.
Everton, Leeds.
Just when I thought it weren't going to get any worse, we come on to fucking this other game where I've got to listen to the other shit show run on for good 5 minutes about about the greatest team in the Premier League. Here it comes. Come on, Jace, that's it. Well, let's wank off Elise a bit more. Here we go.
I'll tell you now, outside of Saka at Arsenal, he is one of the best young players in the Premier League, without a doubt.
Not being funny, whenever one of our players goes on half a good run and we lose 6-0, that's still in the highlights from a Norwich fan page. So, yeah, I'll let you have that run back, at least.
To be fair, you did start playing goal music when you were 3-0 down. So
don't even get me started. Yes, OK, I'll add to the fact that we were sitting there in a depressive state. I just haven't had an argument with the Norwich fans about how shit we are. And then all of a sudden we score a goal. And the goal music played out and yay, happy clappers. And, you know, we're 3-1 down with 10 minutes to go. And then it comes up as, oh, no, it's disallowed, which made it even more pathetic and embarrassing. Just kick us out of the Premier League now. Carry on, Jason.
I mean, Jesus Christ, this guy. Beginning of podcast, mid-podcast, and even at the end of the podcast, has got a real bee in his bonnet this week. It's the worst I've ever seen him, to be fair.
Jace, am I right in hearing that Elise has a 35 million buyout clause?
No, that is not true. That is not true. Factually, he's got a 5-year contract, but no way has he got 35 million release clause. The reality is, though, on that point, I can see teams maybe in the summer going for him. I don't see him moving, though, because I genuinely think he'll think, well, hang on a minute. If I move now, am I going to start? But he, within the next 2 years, is going to be a £70 million player, no doubt about it. I'm telling you now, he will, within 3 years, put it on a pen and paper, I'll bet you 20 quid right now. In the next 3 years, he'll be playing for a top European club.
I don't know why, but I have a feeling that if Arsenal got Champions League football, he strikes me as a very Arsenal-type player. But I would not also be surprised to see him go to Bayern Munich if Gnabry goes. Well, because there's rumours that Gnabry's going to leave Bayern, which surprises the hell out of me. Like, I thought Gnabry was going to be, you know, their number one, but for whatever reason, Bayern go through a churnout. I wouldn't be surprised to see Elise be the guy that they thought Hudson-Odoi was going to be and end up going over there.
100%. He's twice the player Hudson-Odoi is going to be. Like, he is outrageous. He is absolutely outrageous. And winding it back to Palace, though, you know, Vieira doing it again. Key wins at key points. Mateta, that's 4 goals now in 8 Premier League starts. Now, I said it before, he'll go under the radar. He is, I think, 23 years old, and we signed him permanently. We had a clause for originally 15 million euros, and we signed him for 8 million euros, which is about 6 million quid. That, in today's market, is outrageous. But Tyrek Mitchell, again, it has to be said, because they picked up on it in the punditry as well, that first half performance of Palace's, and Vieira mentioned it as well, that is the best performance, complete performance Vieira has seen. And he's spoken out a lot. The FA Cup game, I don't know if any of you lads saw the post-match interview there. Vieira was fuming about the performance. He was like, yeah, we won, but we were crap. We were absolute rubbish, you know. And that was the response. Now, if that's at Man United, you'd get a week full of media leaks and then they'd go and get thumped by their, you know, noisy neighbours. But, you know, Vieira's come out, did that, and look, we don't speak about it enough, but we all sat here in the summer, me, you, Cookie, about Vieira. And I remember still to this day when it came up on Twitter that Vieira was going to be, he was being pundit for ITV and the Euros. And then all of a sudden it's announced within 24 hours he's going to be signed as Palace manager. We all sat here and laughed.
You all laughed at me. Well, I have to say, you're not laughing now, are you?
Now, he's 10th. Got Palace 10th, and in an FA Cup quarter-final, which looks like it could be a semi-final, I think for a first year in the Premier League, considering his lack of experience, I think that's outrageous.
It's a huge job what he's done. I think, like, me as a neutral, who I've always, like, sort of liked Crystal Palace. They're quite inoffensive. I've never disliked them. So, and looking what Roy left and how much of an overhaul. I remember Match of the Day alluding to it, and there's so many, as you say, 15 players. I would be buzzing as a Palace fan, because if you look at their stadium, it's a proper stadium. The atmosphere is always electric. Yeah. And looking at what he's done with the players that he's been forced to overhaul. You look at him, you just think he hasn't got any Premier League experience as a manager. On paper, you'd probably say, oh yeah, but Lampard's got Premier League experience and he's got English league experience as well. You'd have thought he'd be, on paper, the man to take over. I'm glad he didn't, because he's a fraud. But for you guys, my God, what's he done? Absolutely amazing.
I can't say fairer than that. And yet again, we've saved the best till last. We cocked up the other week and left Brighton last, but we actually saved the best till last this time round. So I think that is all the games covered, isn't it?
What you don't know is I'm going to edit all of that bit out and then just not have the Palace game. Fair play to you. Again, it goes to show, weren't that long ago where you went, you know what, I'm not going to lie, we could still be dragged into relegation, and here you are now, 10 points ahead of Leeds in 10. It's just an odd season, but it's refreshing to see Palace doing well with a team that is bedding in for the future rather than doing well relying on experience and then thinking, yeah, but we've still got to go through that transition yet. This is you in that transition, lining up with players at the average age of 23, 24, but they're dragged down to the average age of 32 because you've got Joel Ward at right back. So you just need a couple of other players in there. And then you've got a team there, you would hope, that could generate you income or be your team for the next 4 or 5 years. And it's refreshing. It's nice to see. Good time to see how it plays out come 38 games. But fingers crossed it carries on the way it does. Let's wrap this up then. Predictions for this weekend. Take your pick.
Can I pick the Brentford Burnley game, please?
Thought you might.
Drum roll. I'm going to go Brentford 0, Burnley 6. No, I think Brentford 1, Tony penalty, and Burnley 2.
Can't help himself. Look, it's hurt him so bad.
Mate, I'm going to die inside. I'm crying inside. I've been crying inside since Saturday.
Couldn't have happened to a better team, could it? Brentford, God,
it couldn't have been any worse for me.
I'm going to go 1-0 on that one.
I'm going to go 2-1 Brentford.
Cookie has gone also 2-1 Brentford, so you can give him a middle finger as well, Cos.
Yeah, both penises.
Fair enough.
I don't know why that word is just... Side note for the listeners, but if someone calls you a dick, you can take that. Someone calls you a penis, it's just a bit... That's more insulting to me, isn't it?
It's said with good intentions, trust me.
Like this, if I'd rather be one or the other, I'd rather be called a dick. That's like, no pun intended, that's like the hard version. Being called a penis is just like...
It's a hard version with less letters. I'm going to go Man United Spurs for my game.
I thought you were. I was going to pick that one. I knew it would be in the mix. 3-1 Spurs, me.
That's what I said. Yep.
I'm going to go 2-0 Spurs.
Cookie also said 3-1 Spurs. So, go on, Jace, your game.
I am going to pick Arsenal-Leicester. And I'm going to say I fancy Leicester to get a goal. But I think Arsenal win it. I'm going to say 2-1 Arsenal.
3-1 Arsenal, please.
Cookie's gone 2-0 Arsenal. I don't know why I've got the scoreline in my head. It's very brave. But I'm going to go 4-1 Arsenal.
4-1?
Yeah. Cookie's game is Everton Wolves.
Cool, that's a big one, isn't it?
And he said 1-1.
I thought someone was going to choose this game, you know.
Go on, what are you saying, Everton Wolves?
This is more in hope than expectation, but I'm going to say... I'm going to say 2-1 Wolves.
I'm going to go with my heart rather than my head. I'm going to go Wolves win 1-0.
So to profit off of your actual predictions, from your head and not your heart, I'll say then that Everton will win 2-1.
Everton are going to bloody win now as well, you watch.
Cool. Right, we are not far away from who's up or down coming to an end. So, boys, you've got two teams to move again in your league table. Make sure you've got it concrete, because if you haven't, you're running a fine line here. So you've got two teams or two positions as such.
I'm moving Newcastle up two places. They're currently 18th. So that would put Burnley, Watford and Norwich in 18th, 19th and 20th.
I was going to move Wolves up to 8th, because I currently got them in 10th. But I tell you what, with the way they're going, Leicester could be out of nowhere. All of a sudden, as I say, a point behind Wolves, and then I'm like, shit, have I moved it too early? The bottom seems hard to predict. How many games have we got left? We're not far off.
10 or 11, I think.
Yeah, we've only got three games in some cases to get this table where you want it to be before we miss the deadline and then we can't move it anymore. I'm going to be brave here, but I'm going to move Arsenal up two places into 4th.
I'm going to move Arsenal two places. I had them 7th, then I said 8th. So again, that expectation of where they were actually going to finish at the beginning of the season, and I'm going to move them two places up to 6th.
More room to go with Arsenal there. Cool. Right, that's who's up or down done, which means it's the end of the show, Jace.
Well, on this note, I'm going to hand over the reins to sign us out to Norfolk's answer, the Timo Pukki. So, lads, it's been a pleasure. Cossy, you've been a delight to work with this evening. Do us the honours. Pod 40. No, unfortunately, Norris still on 40 points. But do us the honours and sign us out.
Thank you very much for listening to the rant on Total Football Norwich, or should I rename it Nothing Football Norwich. I do apologise. I will not be ranting every single week because I am sick to death of everything to do with football. However, if you want to hear some positive analysis of Liverpool games over the next few weeks, and hopefully, yes, let's say hopefully we will win the league. Fuck Norwich, and good night, and thank you very much for listening.
Thank you for listening to Total Football Debate Podcast. We hope you enjoyed this episode. It would mean the world to us if you could spread the word regarding our show and leave us a rating so we know how we're doing. Also, please, please, please interact with us on social media, especially on Twitter at TFDebate, where we'd love to hear your thoughts and opinions on any of the topics we discuss each week. You never know, we may even get you on the show to say hello. Thanks again for listening, and keep an ear out for the next episode.